Mr. Rosa, what do these H.G. Wells archives consist of?
The first part is a great collection of the original manuscripts, proofs, corrected typescripts, various drafts of Wells's own work, which goes to show how very carefully he did work. Secondly, there is a great collection of more than 1,000 volumes of all the main editions of Wells's books in many languages. And a very great many of these volumes bear annotations in Wells's hand, corrections for later editions, and a great many more bear personal inscriptions from him to his wife, often illustrated with the charming little drawings, which he called pictures. Thirdly, and perhaps the most important part of the archives, is the great collection of not less than 10, possibly 15,000 letters from eminent contemporaries in all walks of life.
Well, now, about the manuscripts of his own works, are they all of published works?
Not all, no. In many cases, there are early versions of stories which Wells later rewrote. In some cases, short stories or articles, but in some cases, quite important original manuscripts of books which didn't see the light of day in that form. For instance, I think the most important of them is an entirely unknown version of the great novel Kipps, which Wells wrote 6 years earlier under the title of Kipps and Waddy. That was in 1899. It wasn't published then, but 5 years later, 6 years later, Wells rewrote it and gave to the world the Kipps, which has been such a favourite wherever English is read.
And what about, can you tell me something about the personal papers and letters?
The personal papers spread over the whole of Wells's life, even beginning with his mother's diary before he was born, and ending with this great sheaf of messages of condolence when he died. In between, letters to his mother and his brothers, his close friends, and other papers than letters, such things as little manuscript magazines, like so many boys have produced in their homes. I remember a little magazine recording a fire in the street, in which Wells, then only a schoolboy at Bromley, had written a report which gave a good indication of the facility he was going to have later on. Well, the whole of his life is reflected in personal papers of that sort, and perhaps more importantly, in, as I've said before, the great series of letters from almost all the people, contemporaries of his, whose names come readily to mind now.
What, literary people?
Many literary people indeed, such as Joseph Conrad, Bernard Shaw, Arnold Bennett, John Galsworthy, Sir James Barrie, yes. Kipling, Hardy, and later people too, like James Joyce and even Ezra Pound.
Yes. Can you give me any instances of his correspondence with Shaw, for instance?
That is such an immense correspondence that it's hard to know what to pick out. They wrote intimately, ranging over a vast number of subjects. Sometimes Shaw was very friendly, sometimes Shaw was bitterly critical. But there are two extremes that may be amusing. There's an occasion when, obviously, they were in light-hearted mood together and had been practicing mirror writing, in which the hand slopes backwards. Shaw's contribution, written in that neat little hand of his, still neat, although written backwards, was the infamous comment, H.G. Wells is a liar.
Dealing with this great mess of correspondence, it must have taken a long time. I suppose it hasn't yet been fully listed and catalogued.
Indeed, no. The full listing and cataloguing of the work will take several years, even with the vast resources which will be available for that work in the university in America to which it is going. I had some 4 or 5 months of intensive work in examining and just summarizing the papers, and I may say that never has anything more fascinating and exciting happened to me in my career in the book world. I felt like a boy let loose in a treasure house, finding at every turn such things as I dreamt of.
Do you feel it's rather a pity that all this material should be going overseas to the United States?
No, Mr. Reynolds, under circumstances, I don't. I think it far better that it should be there than that it should lie unused in store here. I confess I should be happier if our own great national libraries and institutions were sufficiently well endowed and equipped to buy and to use this material thoroughly. But unfortunately, in the present state of things, that can't be so. And I'd like to think that the physical presence of material of this sort in the American universities encourages the students there and eventually leads to a better understanding between the nations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roter.